girls. What? Keep it fresh.
Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. For Sarah Walker, coffee has always been about more than just coffee. She founded Vent Coffee Roasters in 2013 with the goal of letting out the bad and taking in the good. Sarah has been the in-house coffee roaster at Argosy Cafe downtown since 2015, and in the spring she'll be opening her first brick-and-mortar store in Union Collective, a forthcoming manufacturing and retail complex in Medfield. Sarah talked about the turning point in her relationship with coffee, the sense of community she's passionate about cultivating, and bringing her knowledge back to Charm City. Here's our conversation. What is Vent Coffee Roasters? What do you do?
So I roast coffee. Yeah, I have a Dietrich IR5 roaster, roast up to about 12 pounds. But I basically right now just do wholesale roasting and then some pop-ups, and then soon that will change.
So what does coffee roasting mean? Does that mean you like collect the beans and do something to them? Or for someone who knows nothing about coffee, what is that process?
Sure. So coffee, I guess to even go back a little further, coffee is actually a pit to a cherry. It is not a bean that a lot of people assume that it is. And the pit is actually green. So when I get coffee in, it looks green. It's like a hard pit to a fruit. And then I will put it into this machine, and it's a drum roaster. So it's kind of like a dryer. And there's a heat source underneath the dryer. And as it goes, it will slowly roast the coffee. So it turns like a yellow color and then an orange color. That smell at that point is kind of like kettle corn and hay, which is probably my favorite. And then it'll slowly turn to the brown color. And then it's up to the individual roaster as to that profile and how long they want to roast it, how dark they want to go, how light they want to go, that kind of thing at that point.
So how did you first get into coffee roasting?
Oh, man. So I actually, back in 2005, 2006, worked for the Daily Grind here in Baltimore. And
Is that the one in Fells?
So I started actually when they had one at Johns Hopkins.
Oh, okay.
And then by the end of my time with the Daily Grind, I was at the Fells Point store at the end. At that point in life, I knew that I wanted to be in coffee, but it was more the idea of what a coffee shop was, not necessarily the product. Like, I drank coffee, but it wasn't necessarily my passion at that point. It was like, I just want to have a great community spot that people can come and mix and match chairs and, you know, just kind of like this old school idea of a coffee shop. And then I had went to visit a friend in California, Sacramento, actually, and I'd went to a coffee company called Temple. At the time, they were called Temple Fine Coffee and Tea. Now they're just Temple Coffee. And that was the first time I had seen like a cappuccino done with latte art, with micro foam. It wasn't the thick meringue foam. I literally can still remember walking into the shop, where I sat, who was working. I remember the whole day to the tea, the milk and how the proteins in it were caramelized just right, that it sweetened the milk without there being any sugar in it, and the espresso wasn't over roasted, so it tasted chocolatey, and it was almost like I was drinking a hot chocolate more than it was an espresso beverage, even though there was no sweetener, no chocolate. It was just espresso and milk. And at that point I was like, if this is what I'm going to do, then this is how I want to do it and what I need to know. So summer of 2007 I moved out to California and was on the way, and got a job with that shop and was with them for a little while, and then a few other shops, and then I learned to roast in Reno. And so altogether I was on the West Coast for about 5 years.
So was coffee something that you early on like had an inkling that you wanted to be part of, or was the Daily Grind just kind of like a job you took for the money that you later got more into?
So I didn't grow up with my parents drinking coffee. I didn't really drink coffee, and even at that point it was like super sweet stuff until I was like a senior in high school. And so even at that point, probably when I was like 20, 21, maybe 22, was when I had that desire to have this the coffee shop, but not necessarily my thinking or my passion or whatever wasn't necessarily in the product. And that changed in like 2006, 2007.
So would you say that experiencing that espresso drink was kind of like a turning point for
you? Oh, yes, absolutely.
And was that because of the great drink, which you just described, or do you think like something else was clicking into place at that point?
I would say the drink had a lot to do with it.
They just made like a damn good coffee.
It was so good. I mean, because I'd only ever, you know, like a cappuccino, it was like your espresso, and then it was like this like 2-inch tall, like this foam, but that foam kind of lacked taste to me, you know, but I was just getting into it and I was like, oh, well, this is just how it's supposed to be. And I was kind of, I'm not going to lie, sometimes there's certain things that come into my life, if not other people's lives, that are like, it's just cool. And so you try to make yourself like, that's how I got into sushi for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Was I was like, it's the cool thing to do. And now I love it and it's my favorite. So I guess there's good reasons for that stuff. But the customer service too was amazing. Actually, the person that was working was the owner that day. And we had ordered the drink. My friend and I had ordered cappuccinos, and then I had to use the bathroom. So I went to use the bathroom and I came back and the drink was done and it sat there, and you could tell that maybe, I couldn't tell at the time, now I know, but the drink had been sitting for maybe a minute, right? And he comes up and he's like, oh, do you want me to remake that for you? And I was like, what? No, that's fine. Now I get it, because when you do really pretty latte art and if it sits for even like 30 seconds, specifically before the customer has gotten to see it, like you'll have, like it'll start to maybe get bubbly a little bit or start to not look as like glossy and mm-hmm. beautiful and whatever. So I get it now, but at first I was like, no, it's okay. It's been sitting there for like maybe 30 seconds to a minute. It's fine. So customer service was, the shop design was beautiful. Like it was a lot of things, but I think it was that drink that was like, what? Coffee can taste like this without having to quote unquote doctor it. Now I call it polluting because I think I do a good job.
So yeah. Have you always been an artistic person, and have you always been kind of like culinarily inclined?
I've always liked to cook, things like that. I was good at drawing. I'm super out of practice. So there's a lot of things that I feel like I can dabble in. Like I feel like my drawing's okay. I do like to sing, and I used to play guitar for a little bit, but it's been a long time. I think insecurities definitely in a lot of that stuff had gotten the best of me over the years. I think coffee is the one thing that I'm like, no, I'm made to do this, and I can't imagine doing anything else.
Were you good right away?
No. I'm a perfectionist though. And I remember when I first was just training for just a barista, like take out roasting and all that jazz at Temple, I would get so frustrated that in the first, like my first four hour session of training, I didn't get the steamed milk right. And my boss is like, dude, chill out. You're just like, it's not gonna, latte art doesn't happen overnight. Getting the right consistency with milk doesn't happen overnight. I still practice, and I've been doing it since 2007. Like every cup is like, okay, can I get the symmetry right on this one? Can I get the contrast right on this one? You know, let me try this swan, or let me try this Rosetta a different way. And so it's always a practice. So there's definitely people better than me for sure. I think roasting came pretty naturally, but I think it's because of the years of just being in the coffee industry that helped with that, with all the chemistry in that side of things. I think it made it a little easier to pick that up.
Did it feel like a risk to move out to California kind of with this pipe dream of, you know, working at this coffee shop and everything?
Oh, yeah. Luckily, I had friends and family and that were just like, you can always come back. You can always, like, it's not a big deal, like, if it doesn't work out. So I'm glad that I had that push. There was never really a pressure like, oh man, if I go and I am horrible at this and I don't really like anything else and I come back and it's embarrassing. And they're like, no, it's not. Like, who cares? Like, just go try this. And if it doesn't work out, then come back. Even my parents never pushed for college. I did a couple semesters like here and there after high school. I was never a good student. So that didn't, I knew that whatever I did, I would have to just start from the ground up. And so that was part of it. Moving out there was like, okay, I really think that this is what I want to do. So I'm just going to start from the ground up. I'll start as a barista, work my way up, and see what happens. And I guess it worked out.
What about roasting coffee and making drinks did you love off the bat?
I really did like a lot of the chemistry of it, and the specifically in roasting, like the precision. I will tell you, the most satisfaction has actually come with when I was learning to roast before I got to the big machines. I had a bread maker and heat gun. I still have it, and I still use it for samples. And there is something about paying attention to the time, the temperature, the smell, the look of it, all of these different things, and then to like nail it at the end. And that's like even in barista work, like it's okay, so if this shot comes out bad, like that's my fault. So I need to tweak the grind in this, and I need to do that. And I loved doing all that stuff. Like I'm just a hands-on person anyway. And it's how I learn. I'm not like a book learner. So I think that's also what I love about coffee, because you have to be hands-on to... It's really hard to get hired in a coffee shop or the coffee industry if you don't like coffee or... Yeah.
So is it pretty like analytical or more like mathematical in that way? Like things have to be exactly right to be perfect? Or is it more like freestyle and creative?
You can be creative. I would definitely say that it's like, so latte art, you can be creative. There's definitely these standards to be like, that's a perfect Rosetta. I don't think that's not, I mean, who cares really? As long as it looks cool. No, but the texture of the milk is super important. So you can't really be creative with your latte art if that's not on point. A difference of like a gram can mess up an espresso shot from good to bad. Even in a pour over or any slow bar method, pour over, French press, AeroPress, any of those things. If you're off by a few grams, or if your water is too hot or not hot enough, it will not extract well or over extract, if that makes sense. So yes, you do. There is a lot of math. There's a lot of chemistry in it, but there is still room for creativity and discussion and change.
So what brought you back to Baltimore?
Well, born and raised here. All my immediate family's here, even now, except for I have an older brother in China right now. But my siblings started having kids, and even more so, I am just East Coast through and through, and I miss the grit, honestly, the grit and the grime of Baltimore, as well as everything that is lovely about it. I can't imagine now living anywhere else. Like, I want to travel, but this is home. I'm not going anywhere. So that was a big thing. I wanted people that would speak to me bluntly. And yeah, the Domino Sugar sign, I'm not going to lie, but every time I would come home to visit, like, I love, there was like this like beacon of light in the city that I'm like, it's so beautiful, like for whatever reason.
Yeah, I totally get that. So on the West Coast, I haven't spent much time at all on the West Coast. Is it true that just like the mentality and the attitude is kind of like slower paced and very chill when you say you're like East Coast through and through?
Yes. So Sacramento is a little different, like I feel like more north of, more Northern California is, no, it's pretty chill. even so, it's pretty chill. There's this grit that just isn't there. There's this rawness that I just didn't feel was there. And so I don't want to say that anybody was fake. I think that they were genuine. I don't know. Maybe it just wasn't hard enough for me. No, I don't know how to explain
it.
Yeah,
accustomed to a certain level of life difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, not even necessarily life difficulty. Well, I don't know. I definitely tell you I like being somewhere specifically that is not majority white, like as in a city. I think I miss that. I miss a lot of the culture that Baltimore provides, real perspective and real understanding in maybe things that are more important in life. I don't know. But yeah, I love Baltimore too much to not come back. I also missed seasons, like equal seasons.
Did you grow up in Baltimore City?
Right on the outskirts, like Arbutus area. Born and raised, my parents still live there.
Did you like it here growing up?
I don't remember not liking it. It probably wasn't until I got to be an adult and after high school, I had lived in a couple different places, different states, but I always loved coming back. And then as lived in the city off and on when I wasn't in another state, I lived in the city. Yeah. I mean, I loved growing up here. It wasn't like I wish I didn't live in Baltimore, you know, even when I was younger. I don't know if I really knew a whole lot just being out, not even out in the county. It's not that far in the county, but you know what I mean? Not in the tightness of the city, I guess.
Do you remember what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So probably when I was 5 or like really young anyway, I wanted to be a vet. And then the idea of having to put down an animal was like, oh no, I couldn't do that. Outside of that, no, I don't think I knew until I used to say that I wanted to be a backup singer for Mariah Carey.
The dream.
I even named, I had a cat named Mariah, like, anyway.
That's amazing.
But my mom always thought I would be a radio DJ because I could just hear a song once on the radio and pretty much just pick up, like, I definitely have the chorus down and even a lot of the, and I'd have it memorized. Like, I'd be able to sing it after, you know, after I heard it when it wasn't playing or whatever. And I love all different kinds of music. So that's what my mom thought. That would have been cool.
Are you feeling pretty cool and comfortable here in the podcast studio? Do you feel like this is like your DJ roots coming out?
I mean, I'm definitely not as nervous as I thought I'd be.
Well, that's good. Like,
no, this is fun. But yeah. I don't know. Maybe if coffee doesn't work out, maybe I'll go back to that. I don't know. I really also like to pack and organize. So maybe I'd be a professional organizer if that didn't work out.
I think that can be like a good side hustle. I have seen people on Instagram and stuff who I think just do that for their disorganized friends. So you could definitely have a future in that on the side.
I mean, I'm really good at packing a car like Tetris. I mean, when I moved to California, I drove. So I packed everything I owned in a car that I still have today. It's a 91 Honda Civic. And packed everything in there. And it was like, and 2 cats in the car that were like free roaming. So I still had space at the top. It was amazing. And then drove over and the same thing on the way back.
Did you take your time getting out there? Did you see the sights or anything? Or were you kind of just on a mission to get out there quickly?
On the way over, I drove by myself. So I didn't take as much time. I was also doing amateur photography for my friend's wedding.
Do you still do photography?
They turned out well, but no, not really. No. Outside of my iPhone, I haven't really picked up a camera much. But yeah, so I had driven out, so I knew I had to be there by a certain date anyway for the wedding. So I did it all in 5 days, actually, by myself. I took a southern route because I had friends that I could stay along the way. And on the way back, though, my brother drove with me, and we took 9 days and did a lot of sightseeing. So like Grand Canyons, Gia Cliff Dwellings. We went to the Alien Museum in Roswell.
How was that?
It's actually pretty cool. I'm like, I don't know if I believe in aliens, but
if so, you've paid your
respects. It's possible. Like, I don't know. Like, some of the stuff that they had there is pretty convincing.
Did you start working in coffee shops right out of high school, or did you do anything kind of post high school and those college semesters before ending up on the coffee path?
No, I would say my first like legit coffee job was the Daily Grind, 2005, 2006. And before that, I had bus tables. I dishwashed, actually. I really like dishwashing. And I was like, no, okay, obviously not in my own home. I've got dishes piled up. It's dumb. But I liked it. Like, the first dishwashing job I did was for a hotel when I was still in high school, actually. And I liked just nobody bothered me. Like, I was just kind of in the back, which is interesting that I'm in a customer service job now and I really enjoy talking to people. But then it was like, oh man, I can be my own little world and do dishes. And yeah, it's just very like methodical. Just get it done.
That power washer thing off the wall always looks satisfying.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I got to get a dishwashing job on the side.
Oh gosh. So just little jobs here and there. It wasn't really anything that stuck out.
What has it been like to be a business owner, and does that side of things come naturally to you?
Does not come naturally. I'm a doer, like I said earlier, like very much hands-on. I love roasting. I love barista work, running errands, getting all that stuff done. I don't mind doing QuickBooks, like put like data entry stuff doesn't bother me. Social media, networking, events, things like that are not my strong suits. But luckily, I have a business partner now, and he is awesome at that stuff. So I don't have to worry about that.
Is that a recent development?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just since deciding to open this first brick and mortar, I asked him to join me. And that has been really good because we've gotten some additional accounts. And I don't think oh, I need to keep posting on Instagram and, you know, like this event and that event all the time. Like I'm kind of a doer. So I knew that in order for Vent to be successful, I needed someone with those skills regardless. So I don't know. Some people may think that that's like, sometimes I struggle with like maybe that I am not, I don't know, that I'm failing a little bit because I can't, or I know that I'm not good at all of those things. Sometimes it would be awesome if I was just this one woman show that could do it all, but I know where my weaknesses are and I want Vent to succeed and I want to do this probably the rest of my life. So if that was really going to happen, then I needed and wanted to bring someone on that could complement my weaknesses and we can make it work together. So
you have been pretty much a one woman show up to this point, right?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, what parts of that did you enjoy and what were the most challenging beyond, like you said, like the networking, the social media?
Well, doing it on my own, I have had to also hold full-time jobs and then kind of do Vent on the side. So it hasn't been to the point where, because I have not been great at networking and doing a lot of that, it's been hard to grow it also because I'm working full-time for someone else as well. And the things I do like about it, or did like about it, sorry, Andrew, but I did like making all the decisions on my own and not having to not consult or ask permission, but like just to be like, hey, so this is what I'm going to do. What do you think about this? Because your strengths lie here and I need those strengths. So I can't just make that decision because maybe that's not the best decision that needs to be made and I'm not thinking of something. And so it's good now that I have that. But there are sometimes, it's also still a habit that sometimes he's like, oh, I didn't know that. And I'm like, dag on it, I'm sorry. I didn't tell you that. Because I'm used to just doing it all by myself. I'm used to not having to explain this and that or whatever. And it's fine and it needs to happen and it's good. But that definitely made it easier for me because I was the only person that needed to be consulted or concerned with this and that. And so there's some times that I miss that. But that's just communication with any partner. Like, you work on it and you gotta grow and it's good. It's fine. I'm excited about it.
What do you think is the appetite for high quality coffee in Baltimore? Is there a culture of that here? Are people like really excited about coffee roasters in Baltimore? Or do you see your role as having to kind of get more people on board with that?
I think it's growing. I think it's out there. Like, I think as far as other states or even like compared to the West Coast, I think that we're behind in saturation, even in a city this size, you know. But there's a lot of great roasters that are doing awesome things. Thread Coffee is one of them. They do a great job. A couple other small ones that are coming up. We're even getting other outside of Baltimore companies coming in. So I definitely think there's a need. I think there's a lot of areas that could use coffee shops. And it's a community. It doesn't need to be like, not everyone's going to like this person's roasting style. And that's okay. That's why you have this one over here, you know, that kind of thing. I definitely think there's an appetite for it. I just, you know, want to get Vent out there, you know, more and introduce ourselves and, you know, let them know that we're an alternative. And yeah, but I'm excited about the scene. I think it's growing. There's more people popping up, small little roasters popping up here and there. So it's good.
Yeah, tell me about the move to a brick and mortar in Union Collective.
Yes, the Union Collective. Yeah. Very excited. With opening a shop and taking that risk, I've really just been holding off for, the right risk. Like, no matter what it is, it's going to be a risk and it's going to be scary no matter where I'm going and who I'm joining or whatever the case may be. But I really wanted it to feel like it was coming home. And the Union Craft Brewing guys are amazing and they feel like family. And so when they were like, hey, are you interested? And I'm like, yes. And then the other companies and businesses that are going in there are super exciting to me. Earth Trex is doing a bouldering gym and I'm a climber. I'm an indoor climber. I'm a member of Earth Trex. I don't really do climbing outside yet. I just started in June. Charmery, Baltimore Whiskey Company, Huckle's Hot Sauce. So even when I'm not working, I don't know if I'm going to want to leave, which is okay.
What do you think the transition is going to be like to be a little more forward facing and to be in that brick and mortar all the time?
I'm excited. It's going to be busy. It's going to be long hours. The roaster will be in there as well as a full espresso bar. What makes the Union Collective a different unique compared to like Mount Vernon Marketplace or Our House is that it is zoned for manufacturing. So it allows these small businesses to grow and still remain a part of like in the city and in the community and not having to find some random warehouse either in the county or in a part of the city where it's just warehouses and there's no people, there's no community, that kind of thing. So that's what makes this spot really exciting. So the roastery will be able to grow as well as having a full cafe, well, full coffee shop. I'm not cafe. Sometimes I think about like, there's going to be lots of food. And I'm like, no, I'm going to not do food. I'm just going to have some pastries.
A liquid cafe.
Exactly. So yeah, it's going to be busy, fun. I'm excited. The work and the challenge makes me just nervous, like, because it's huge. It's a big step for me, for Vent. But I'm excited for the challenge. I'm excited. I don't mind the long hours. Bring them on.
For people who don't really know anything about coffee or, mm-hmm. you know, local roasting or something like that, what do you think their perception might be? And do you think there's any kind of, like, barriers to entry?
For this shop,
like someone who's no, not for yours, but for someone who is interested in coffee, like, do you think that it can ever kind of come across as like
pretentious?
Yeah, pretentious or hard to kind of like, where do I begin?
Yes, it can come across like that. In just a little defense of that, I think anyone that is super passionate about anything can come across snobby. if And so I'm not giving excuses, but I have noticed because sometimes even for someone like myself that cannot stand the pretension and just kind of like, what do you mean you don't know that a macchiato isn't traditionally a million ounces, you know, like instead of coming off like that, sometimes I'm like, I get so passionate about it that I do think that it can still come across like that, even though that's not intended. But I can see how specifically in specialty, like third wave coffee shops, where they are doing more of the slow bar and they're more particular and they're more like with the latte art and stuff like that, it can definitely be intimidating because there's so much care and importance put on that that I think sometimes you can lose the customer service or your teaching can just come across rude or people aren't ready for that. One of the best stories that I have for that is there's a coffee shop in Santa Cruz called Verve Coffee Roasters. And when they first opened, they were telling me the story of a guy that would come in and he'd get mochas. There's nothing wrong with mochas, but for coffee geeks like me, you want everyone to drink like straight shots of espresso, right? And instead of being a shop that tried to convince or talk customers into getting something that they weren't ready for, like going from a mocha to a shot of espresso, this gentleman, this customer, just watched them geek out behind the bar, right? Talk about the different flavor notes in the espresso and get really nerdy about it. And by 2 years in to Verve Coffee Shop being open, or Verve Coffee Roasters being open, this guy was drinking shots of espresso, right? Because it was a relationship that was built and conversation, and it wasn't like, oh, I'm trying to teach you even if you're not ready for it. So for those that get intimidated, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that us geeks make you nervous. I think that there's a lot of things that shops can do to minimize that also. For example, one thing that I've done before is like for an AeroPress, our ratio, our recipe that we have fills the cup exactly like to the brim. And instead of being like making a recipe that is a little lower in the cup so it looks like you're supposed to put cream and sugar in it, filling it all the way to the top and presenting it that way is a way that they kind of have to just taste it before they put anything in it without you being an a-hole about it. Like, you don't want to do that. Like, you need to taste it first. But if you just present it in a certain way that's like, oh, let me drink this down a little bit so I can put cream and sugar. And they're like, oh, can I get cream and sugar? Yeah, absolutely. And you go get it without, you don't need, there doesn't need to be a conversation about it. It's just little ways that a coffee shop can try to teach without being jerks about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Did I answer the question?
You did. Yeah. Okay. There's like an element of trust, right? Because even like I think of a bartender, and if you tell them what you like and you don't like, you don't want to take the drink that's being forced on you that has things like, you know, you don't like, but you want that bartender to kind of come up with an elevated version.
Absolutely.
And take their recommendation for it. So I guess there is a lot of like back and forth and trust in that way.
There is specific. And another example is like even with just whether it's drip coffee or they're getting a different brew method, like a single brew method. Some people will be like, oh, what's your recommendation? And I've even had to try to teach other staff members, don't just give them your favorite, like, because they might hate that. So when people ask me, oh, what do you recommend? My first question is always like, what do you usually drink? Or what characteristics do you like? Because I love Kenyas, but Kenyas tend to be really savory, like tomato-y. I love it. They're some of my favorite. But like, if you don't want to taste tomato in your coffee, then I would probably tell you not to get a Kenya. You know what I mean? Or if you put a little bit of cream and sugar, I probably wouldn't give you a very bright Ethiopian, because even if the milk is not bad, it may make it taste that way because you have that high acidity and that brightness that it's like, oh, now I've got like this like lemon milk. That sounds kind of gross.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
Do you know what I mean? So, I think that's part of the conversation too, is just being like, well, what are you used to? What do you like to drink? Like that kind of thing. And then, yeah, exactly like a bartender. I love when bartenders are like, or when I'm like, hey, you just make me whatever you want. And they're like, well, do you have a base in mind? Is there anything that you don't like? And it's easier to be like, yeah, I just don't want that. Anything else, you know, that kind of thing. But I like when it's a conversation instead of, like you said, forcing something on someone. It's like, oh no, they don't like that.
Beyond the actual roasting and the actual coffee and the flavors, what is it about serving people coffee and having this business that you really respond positively to? What you kind of touched on community earlier. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Yeah. Coffee shops have just always been a hub, whether political or otherwise, for conversation, for new ideas. There's a lot of history in people gathering. Specifically, no matter what side of the coin you fall on any discussion, like, this is a commonality, this cup of coffee. Like, you like it and I like it. And we can sit down together and have this cup of coffee, no matter, you know, like I said, like what side of the coin you land on. But it's another home, specifically with Vent. Like, the whole idea of that name and that vision is to be a place where people can come and let out the crap of the day, like whatever they're dealing with, and to take in something better, like more positive. I want Vent to be that place. I want our coffee to be able to, like, that idea to go into people's homes, you know, or other coffee shops or businesses. If you look at the logo, like, it's an actual vent with a V in the center of it. Like, I think it's important. I think it's important that people have a place to gather and where it can feel like another home. And that's really important to me. I love talking to people. Specifically, it's easier for me to even engage people to start with something that we have in common, like this cup of coffee. Oh, man. I had when in working at Argosy as well, while I've owned Vent, Argosy Cafe downtown, we had a customer that had come in, and she was really dealing with a loss of someone that was really important to her. And I didn't know that at the time. And one day she had come in kind of like in tears, and I like asked her if she was okay. And then she had told me that she had lost someone and she was just having a hard time, and gave her the cup of coffee. And somehow, I usually don't do this, but I was like, well, I just want you to know that like the coffee company, like that I operate out of here right now, like the whole, this is the vision, you know, what I just said, like is to have people just kind of to let out what's bothering them and to be able to take in something better, you know, and for my coffee to be able to create that change or whatever. And like, she like tears came down like even stronger, and like she's like, can I give you a hug? She's like, I totally needed this. Like, and I mean I don't want everyone to come in crying, so please don't come in crying, but if you do, like I want our staff to be able to be okay with that, like be okay with people coming in and venting, people coming in and being angry, and people coming in, and everyone has their lives, everyone has their issues that they're dealing with. And I just love the idea of hopefully being a safe place for people.
Where do you see the future of Vent Coffee?
Oh, well, some people say that I don't dream big enough. So for me, I'd be fine with like a couple shops and, you know, have a bunch of wholesale accounts. But I think my business partner would like to be gigantic, you know, like huge. And that's fine. I think my hopes and dreams are not necessarily, like, I want to do well. I'm sorry. I'm probably really not giving this answer well. I would like to have a meager home and to be able to travel every now and again. I'd like to start a family. I want to do foster care. I'd like to be able to do those things and to have a fulfilling life. I'm not in it to get rich, of course. I don't think anyone that goes into coffee thinks that they'll get rich. So that's okay. But yeah, I think to start, I'd like to grow to a few shops and have a good amount of other coffee shops using our coffee. That's where I see the future. I'd like to eventually, currently I'm only using Baltimore importers for the green coffee. So our selection is only like 7 to 10 coffees versus other shops may have a lot more country options, origin options. But since we're only using Baltimore importers, the selection is not as wide. I'd love to get to the point where maybe we dabble in some importing and we get to go to farms and build that relationship ourselves and negotiate those terms and things like that to, you know, to support people and farmers and stuff like that way.
Sarah, thanks for coming in today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Sarah Walker. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast. If you like Female Trouble, please subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. We're also on Stitcher, Google Play, and everywhere else you like to listen. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring Baltimore's own TT the Artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.